Mr. Wagner, let's talk about your public service and what you bring to the table as a candidate for mayor.
Well, you know, I've been in public service my whole career, really. I started out as a teacher. I have an education degree as my undergraduate degree, and I taught school, and then I went on to law school. And while I was in law school, I took a job with the city of Dayton, and I worked for the city as a legislative aide to the city commission. Then I worked as someone in the city manager's office as an assistant there, and then in the Department of Planning and Development. I left there to open my own law practice, but it wasn't long before I was back in the employ of the government as a magistrate in what they call today a magistrate in probate court. And that's where I kind of started really getting the bug. I had been involved in politics, of course, being a legislative aide in the city. And I was a treasurer to Chuck Kern when he ran for state senate back in 1980. And then I decided I really wanted to get involved myself. Started running some campaigns and eventually became county auditor in 1991. And did that for 10 years until I became a judge in Montgomery County Common Pleas Court. Did that for 10 years. And then I retired from public service and sat at home for a couple of weeks and said, nah, I'm not done yet. I want to get back in the game. And I'm loving it.
So you've got a large body of experience within politics, 30-plus years.
I do. Large body within politics and more importantly, I think, within the community, where I've served not only in the government, but I've served on numerous charitable boards and other kinds of boards. I was on the RTA board. I was a chair of the Civil Service Board. I'm currently on the Artemis Center board, Big Brothers Big Sisters. I'm on their executive committee. I am on the Greater Dayton Christians Connections board. I'm at Think TV's Visionary Society. So I'm on it. Still doing a lot of things in the community, and that's what really that makes my life purposeful. It turns me on. Love it.
And as mayor, which is a part-time position, but both you and Nan Whaley have stated that you'll be more visible and put more time into that.
Oh, without question, I'll do it as a full-time job. The mayor needs to be full-time. You can't run a city the size of Dayton and with the problems that Dayton's facing without giving it a full-time commitment. And so I hope to do that and put all my energy into that.
Do you see any problems with the structure of the way Dayton's run other than the part-time mayor?
You know, it's funny that after 35-plus years of being in the city, living in the city, almost 40 years now of living in the city and having worked for the city, I see a lot of the same problems. I go to the meetings and hear a lot of the same complaints and a lot of the same issues. And quite honestly, I'd have to say that because we have the same issues that exist now that existed 35, 40 years ago, that can explain why we've lost so much population over those years, so many jobs and so many things have gone away. It was kind of a difficult atmosphere 35 and 40 years ago, and it continues to be today. It's kind of a kind of place where I tell you, I work for the county and I've worked for the city, and the county building is much more upbeat and positive and a great place to work for. The city, it's a lot more tangled, and there are too many conspiracy theories, too many kinds of everybody's worried about what the other person's doing, and it's kind of a tough place to work. And really, that attitude and that culture, I think, has been instrumental in driving off jobs because employers come in here wanting to do jobs, and everybody's worried about whether they can say yes to something. Everybody's worried about whether they can pass these inspections and allow this to happen or that to happen. And it ends up delaying the ability of potential business folks to come in here and do business. And when you do that, they just either run off or they tell the next person, look, I did it, but you don't want to come here. And so we drive off businesses all the time because we're too worried. We've created a culture where everybody's too worried about what's the politics of this and how do we do it and how do we get it done. I mean, the politics of it is good customer service, let's get it done, period.
Dayton has certainly seen its share of business and job losses. What steps would you take to reverse that scenario?
Well, the first thing I want to do is I want to bring somebody with significant business experience into City Hall as one of the top managers. That means somebody who has actually done development work or business work and knows what businesses want, knows what they need, can talk the language of businesses, knows what businesses are out there looking for opportunities within inner cities, and also have good experience at customer service. I was reading a story this week about a shoe online shoe sales company that was bought out by Amazon for $1.2 billion. When the CEO of the shoe place was talked to, he said, look, we didn't sell shoes. We sold good customer service. The shoes just was the end product of that. But the whole thing comes down to running a company with good customer service. And that's what we have to do.
What's going right for you right now with in line of attracting businesses and jobs to the Miami Valley?
What goes right now is that we haven't scared everybody away yet. But, you know, we are losing business. We have lost 9,000 jobs in the last 5 years. In the last 2 months, reporting months, we have lost 700 jobs in the city of Dayton. That's net, a net loss of jobs. That means we're still dying. We're still decreasing in size and in effort. So what we're doing right, I think, is beginning to recognize that that's a problem, that that's an issue. Actually, let me go back for a second. 4 years ago, the city recognized that it was a problem. And they did a study and said, how can we better interface with businesses? And they hired a company named Matrix to come in and tell them what they could do better to help businesses. Matrix came up with 25 recommendations, important recommendations, and they prioritized them as high or medium, but these things are things you need to do. 4 years later, they've done about four or five of them, but 20 of them are still sitting on the table waiting to be done. I mean, if we're serious about attracting businesses, we've got to do those things that businesses expect us to be doing. And we've got to do them better than the next city. We've got to do them better than our own suburbs. They're the ones beating us up right now for jobs. We have got to do things better than everybody else. We are in a competitive environment, in a competitive world. And if we don't compete with good customer service and going after these jobs with the best possible technology and the best possible marketing, we're going to lose.
You mentioned customer service, but can you define a little more specifically what is keeping those 20 steps from being taken?
Well, if you ask the commissioners what was keeping them from being taken, for instance, at least Commissioner Whaley reported that it was too expensive. But I would tell you that I also talked to a gentleman, and I can only repeat what he said. I don't know the truth of it. I only know what he told me. He was contracted by the city at one point to merge some of their computer systems, which is a lot of what this study says we need to do. And he got a contract. He worked with them for a little while, and he walked away from the job because he said departments won't even talk to each other. He said it's an impossible task because they won't work with each other. That's the kind of thing that keeps us from doing a good job. And you know, as mayor or city manager, you got to crack down on that and say, no, let's get them all in the room and let's make sure they're talking to each other. Now, I don't know what other problems they might have had with that, but that's what I was told. I've also been told anecdotal stories of people who tried to start businesses, and when they try to start businesses, they just run into roadblock after roadblock. You had a story, in fact, on WISO just last Sunday. It was a repeat, I believe, of a story of the startup of Ghost Light Cafe. And Sean came in and wanted to start a coffee shop, and it took him over a year to get through all the hoops that the city put up for him. Well, you know, a lesser person would have walked away from that and said, you know, I'll start one in Kettering. It's going to be a whole lot easier. But no, we are just constantly putting up roadblocks to businesses and keeping them out. That's what we've got to change.
You mentioned the difference between the city and the suburbs, and we also reported recently that housing was down in the city, but it's rising in the suburbs. So let's talk a little bit more about the differences and how do you build a healthier core.
Yeah, we have to do a couple of things. Number one is we have to encourage the reinvestment in the city, and we have to do that by providing the proper tax incentives and tools to make it attractive to come back to the city. Now, that might mean that we do go back to dollar sales of houses, or it might mean we find a way to do historic tax credits for houses, which gives you 25 to 45% off of your reinvestment into the property. It will make the city, again, worth approaching and worth taking a risk on. We also have to do completely outside and inside, we have to do better marketing. We've got some wonderful neighborhoods that are really nice places to live, and we don't market them well. We need to develop a marketing plan for every neighborhood, showing its assets, and then take it out to the local businesses and employers and say, will you sell this to your people? And we can work with the Board of Realtors to try and make that happen. We have to work with the Board of Realtors to convince them that Dayton's a good place to live too, and that to make sure that realtors are showing houses in Dayton and not just in the suburbs. We've got work to do, but it can be done.
The last time we talked, you mentioned a senior tax cut. Give me the basics on that.
In 2006, and actually we've been doing it for 30 years, the city passed a 0.5% income tax, temporary income tax. Now, the way they convinced seniors to come out and vote for that, senior citizens and disabled folks are, their income, their Social Security income and their retirement income is exempt from the city's income tax. So they don't have a dog in the fight. So what the city does to get them to vote for it is they promise them $50 off their property tax bill if they'll just vote for this levy. And so that's the deal. So every year they get $50 off. Well, the last time it happened was in 2006. It was an 8-year renewal of that temporary increase. And that was the promise made to seniors, again, and disabled folks. You get $50 off your taxes, vote for this. They voted for it. And they voted in voting for it. They also voted the $50 off their taxes. But the actual language was a little bit nebulous. So they took advantage of that last year and said, you know, that $50, never mind. We need it more than you do. And so they took back the $50 from the seniors and from disabled folks, our poorest folks. They took the money back and said, we need it more than you do. Now, and then they used it for things like subsidizing luxury apartments in the Oregon district, or they spent $1 million to tear down the Schwinn building and the Dayton newspapers building. And I'm not saying those aren't good things, but I'm saying let's prioritize. Are we going to take money out of the hands and the mouths of our poor citizens, or are we going to keep our promise and make sure that those folks are taken care of? The second part of this is we have to renew this next year. So in 2014, it comes up for renewal. What do we promise them now? I mean, we've taken away the one promise, the only promise that got them to the polls. And now what do? You go back and make that same promise that you reneged on before. Now what are we going to promise them? And how do we get them to the polls? And how do we pass this levy or this renewal? Because we need the renewal. It means $20, $25 million in the city coffers. We have to have the renewal. But if we don't convince people to vote for it, if we don't give them the incentive because we don't have it anymore to vote for it, where does that leave us? It's a frightening proposal.
Your opponent, Nan Whaley, differs from you on that stance, and I don't want to mischaracterize what she said, but I thought she said the amount was inconsequential.
Well, you know, it's $500,000 and overall for the city, and it's $50 out of people's pockets a year. Is that inconsequential? It depends what your status is. But we're talking about totally disabled people. We're talking about senior citizens. The $50 matters. But more importantly, we're talking about a promise kept. And how do we keep that promise next year if we make it again? Or do we not make it again and just take our chances that people will come out and vote for renewal? I mean, this is a dangerous game we're playing. The commissioner says that people don't care. Well, nobody knew that they had withdrawn this. They said, well, there was an article in the paper. Well, there was an article about 37 different possible cuts. This was buried among them. There was really no notice on this. People voted for it. They voted the tax cut in, but they were not given a chance to even see it, to vote it out.
We've talked about jobs and housing. What other priorities would you have as mayor?
Jobs, housing, we do want to get more police on the street. I do want to see more police officers, and I want to do it by eliminating the civil service test, which has caused a lot of problems over the years. I used to be chair of the Civil Service Board, and when I was chair, we spent a lot of time on how do we overcome the issues of the test, and it eventually ended up about 6 years ago, because it had gotten a lot worse since I was chair of the Civil Service Board, it had, the numbers of African Americans being employed had dropped by about half. And so we were down to under 10% of our police officers were African American, under 5% of our firefighters were. So the Justice Department, the United States Justice Department, sued the city for discrimination. And it's all because of that test. And they forced the city to try and come up with a better test. It took them about 3.5 years to do that. But they've come up with a better test, and hopefully the numbers will improve. But the best thing to do is get rid of the test. It does two things. Number one, it solves that whole problem of discrimination in that sense. And the second part is that it puts police on the street faster. Right now, if a police officer retires or resigns, you can't fill that slot. Until you've got about 30 of them resigned and you've got enough people to conduct a test in a class, you can't fill those slots. So the problem becomes you become very thin, you become understaffed, and you can't fill the slots. If you get rid of the test, we could fill those slots much faster and put police back on the street much faster. Second thing it does, it allows you to hire from outside. It allows you to hire folks who have experience. Right now, if an officer from Cleveland came down here because his mother was ill and they wanted to come down and take care of an experienced officer and said, I'd like to work for the Dayton Police Department, and heck, he's a good officer, he's got good experience, he'd have to say, get in line, go take the test. You can't hire good people. You can't hire to take care of our racial imbalance. You have to go through the test. There's very, very, very few cities left who do the test.
Really?
And it's time to get rid of them. Yeah.
Well, a little bit about the campaign then. You did not receive support from Montgomery County Democratic Party, but you received support from county commissioners, Deb
That's
Lieberman
correct.
And Judy Dodge.
That's correct.
Without the full support of the county Democratic Party, does that put you at a disadvantage?
Well, there's some disadvantages that come with when you don't go with a machine. I mean, it's a machine, and it really is a machine. And all the volunteers and a lot of labor and a lot of others heed the endorsement of the party when they make their decision. A lot of voters heed the endorsement of the party when they make their decision. If you know nothing about me and you know nothing about Nan Whaley, but you see she's endorsed by the party that you favor, you're probably going to vote for her. So, yeah, I was taking on quite a challenge here when I said that I would not accept the endorsement. I knew what I was taking on, though, and I just feel two things. Number one is that there's too much politics in City Hall. There are too many decisions made on a political basis and not on what the city really needs. And number two is that, boy, it's been freeing. It's been really, really nice to be able to say, I don't have to listen to the party in that sense anymore. I can go out and make my own decisions. I can work with Republicans openly and honestly work with Republicans. I'm still a Democrat. But when I need money for a project, I can go to John Kasich's Jobs Ohio. I can go to Mike Turner, and I can try and get money for that project and not feel badly about betraying my party, which is what happens now.
That actually was my next question, and perhaps your answer would be the same. So what do you say to Democrats who may be undecided or not know of both of you and to Republicans who will now be choosing between two Democrats for mayor?
Yeah, in terms of the Democrats, I'm still a Democrat, and I still espouse the majority of Democratic values, the party's values. And you'll still find me voting as a Democrat in almost all cases. But by not accepting the endorsement, I have become or been able to develop a closer relationship already with the Republican and the Republican leadership. They have outright, some of them have outright endorsed me. Some of the Republicans have put together a fundraiser for me. And it means that I'm going to have their support. And if we don't have the Republican support, we can't rebuild the city. All those businesses aren't going to just appear and we're going to just take in Democratic businesses. Most of them are going to be Republicans, and we better be ready to deal with them and make sure that we have a good relationship with them. I mean, fairly and honestly deal with them. We don't give away the store or anything, but we want to have that relationship with the Republican Party. I never had this kind of relationship when I was holding myself out as an endorsed Democrat.
And so you see that nonpartisanship as a strength and a necessity.
It's a great strength. And, you know, it's built into our charter. The charter does not hold partisan elections. These elections are nonpartisan. When you go into the booth, there won't be a D or an R behind anybody's name. It's just vote for the person. And it was designed that way. John Patterson, when he influenced the original charter, tried to take politics out of the charter as much as he possibly could. And that's why you also have a civil service board, and you have this nonpartisan election, and you have other elements in terms of how the city's run. That nonpartisan part is important, he thought was important, and it is. If we run the city in a partisan way, we're going to get the same gridlock you got in Washington. And we have done some things that would have been that were damaging because we weren't willing to work with the Republican Party.
Nan Whaley was very successful in fundraising up to the May primary. And have you been able to make up some ground since then?
No. No, I'm going to – our campaign finance reports will come out this week as we're making this tape. But and you'll see in our campaign finance reports that, no, I've not been successful in fundraising. And I'm okay with that. Again, how much of my soul do I really want to sell in terms of fundraising? I've got some nice donations from some people who are really concerned about the city and who really want to see this city move forward. And they've been very generous to me for that reason. And they really believe in my ability to do it. But Nan's going to raise more money just because of the political route. She's got the labor behind her and all the unions behind her. And she's got the Democratic Party behind her. She'll raise more money than me. But I'm not intimidated by that. I'm really confident yet that we're in a good position.
And how do you make up for that as far as a marketing strategy?
In terms of marketing, you really come into it. I come into it with 30 years of name ID and experience. I come into it with a good reputation of having done a good job as Montgomery County Auditor and as judge. And so I come into the job, I believe, with a lot of the marketing already done. It's like if you are the number one brand in the country, 6 months usually doesn't undo you unless you've done something really terrible. But if you're a good brand and you have stick, you don't have to do nearly as much advertising as number two.
With regard to the primary, very low voter turnout. I believe Nan Whaley was able to generate a lot of activity on Dayton's west side. How do you think you'll fare there and in other parts of the city?
Well, I've been working very hard on both sides of the city, and I really genuinely believe at this point, if the election were held today, that I will win it. I will win both sides of the city. I know that we've made great gains and great improvements in our presence on the west side. We've done a better job of getting to the voters, and we'll do a better job of getting out the vote this election. That's where a lot of, or if not most of our money is going to go toward, is actual get out the vote effort more than advertising. So we think we're going to be fine.
All right. You have actually referred to Dayton as a dying city. Has that stance changed at all? And how do you answer to people who actively working to get rid of that?
Yeah. It's a real problem when you're running for office and you see the actual problems and you name those problems, then everybody gets on you because don't tell them our problems. Oh, my God, nobody will come here if we tell them our problems. Well, you know, if you're running for office and you're trying to make the case that you need change, and you do, then all you can do is lay it out there and say, look, this is the reality of it. Be real here. We lost 9,000 jobs in the last 5 years. We lost 700 in the last 2 months. That's the trend. That's where we're going. That's a dying city. I genuinely believe we can change that. And that's why I'm running. And that's why I want to be mayor. So no, I'm a pretty optimistic guy. But if I'm going to convince voters to vote for me, I got to throw the reality out there. It is what it is. Those are facts. Those are numbers that come from the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services. I didn't make them up. We are a dying city. But let's turn it around. Let's change it, and let's vote for change.
A.J. Wagner, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you.